Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. Alien, written and directed by brothers David and Sam Cutler-Kreutz, drops viewers into the tense and complicated experience that a non-citizen can go through in the U.S. legalization process. The short film, which is nominated for an Academy Award, follows a young couple navigating their green card interview at the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services Office when Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, makes an unexpected appearance and the afternoon takes a turn for the worse, putting the couple and their young daughter in unexpected danger. Filmmakers Sam and David Cutler-Kreutz join us now. Welcome to the Roundtable. Thank you for being here and congratulations on your Academy Award nomination.
Thank you so much for having us.
When and where did you film Alien? Did you recreate a government space or did you gain access to a government space? It all feels very, very real. When and where did you get to, you know, put this movie into action?
Yeah, we filmed it in a college in New Jersey, in upstate New Jersey, in 2021. We were still kind of in the pandemic world, and we were kind of still deep in that as we were going through the filming process.
Yeah, I think something we identified early in the prep process before filming happened was that the location had to feel real, and if you didn't buy the location, the kind of the whole film would collapse. And so it took us about 8 months of looking around different. We called, you know, every place on the planet, courthouses, you know, government buildings, colleges, what you name it, we called them to try and find, you know, a place to film this that felt like it kind of was accurate to the, you know, the story and also the feeling of being in a government building. You know, it's those long hallways and the endless doors, the concrete floors and fluorescent lights. There's a certain kind of like look that's very, everybody knows what it feels like to be, you know, at the DMV or at court, you know?
Yeah. I had to go to the passport office in New York City last year. And I was like, when I was watching the film, I was like, it feels just like that. They did an amazing job capturing exactly how those lines and all the officials make you feel sort of intimidated, whether they mean to or not.
It's funny you said that. Actually, there is some audio in the film that was recorded by me in the DMV. I'm not kidding. Like I was sitting there in the DMV, like while we were prepping the film, or no, I mean, after we edited, and I was like, oh my God, this is what the background needs to sound like in that space. And so I just pulled my phone out and hit record on a voice note. And that background is partially a piece of the background in those scenes.
Yeah, hearing all the numbers in Alien.
Exactly, going off, yeah.
Yeah.
So you two, as you are well aware, are brothers. How do you come to be making films together? How does this partnership work and when did it begin?
Yeah, we grew up sharing a room together and we didn't have a TV in our house growing up. And so we spent all of our time telling stories with each other. That was, you know, how we kept each other occupied, and we'd go on long walks and tell stories. And then Sam went off to film school and then slowly roped me into film. And then, you know, we started making films. Gosh, our first film was maybe 8 years ago.
Yeah, somewhere like that. But I think more sort of professionally started doing it maybe like 5 years ago. It's funny that it's the same things that we did as kids are what we do now as adults. You know, we still take long walks and talk about stories, and those stories now become movies. But it's the same muscle, I think.
Do you mind telling me why there wasn't a TV in your house when you were growing up?
There's I think a lot our parents
of
were mostly
that could come from, but
yeah, I think our parents were mostly afraid of like brain rot. You know, mm-hmm. We got one eventually. I think when we were in high school, I think eventually we had a TV. But for the first at least 15 years of like growing up, you know, for a while, we didn't have a TV really. And you know, even when a TV did come into our house, it was mostly for playing like VHSs. You know what I mean? There was no cable. We didn't have any. I don't think even the NBC, ABC, like the broadcast channels were.
No,
the antenna was messed up, so it was just like it ended up being just a VHS player at the end, but. But yeah, I think, you know, our parents were, yeah, they're big, you know, they like the outdoors and they more like kick us out of the house and into the woods and said, go play, you know, and try to keep us away from the TV. So it's funny, I think, you know, that I'm not sure that exists anymore so much in our current, if it can exist in our current kind of life of screens. Everybody has a screen on in front of them all the time. But yeah, and you know, we grew up in the 90s. It was definitely possible.
Yeah. I didn't have cable until college.
Yeah.
So just like couldn't get it at my house.
But it
But
was
we did
funny
have
when
like
I went off
Netflix.
to college for the first time ever, I had a laptop and I could watch, all the things I always wanted to watch. And so, I think I went through and just ate all the films that existed, like all the, but just going through, cruising through directors, like watching all the Coen brothers, watching all, whatever, Tarkovsky, and like just trying to like get up to speed on things I'd missed,
Yeah. Did you go to the movies when you were growing up, or was there not a theater near enough?
No, there was. We're from New Jersey, and there was a little theater in town. We went, but occasionally here and there. The first film I think I remember seeing in the theater was The Indian in the Cupboard. That was the first film, which is a very old film. But I think, films that David and I saw together in theaters that I think made an impression on us. We saw The Matrix in theaters, I think, and that was a film where we were like, whoa, like movies are really cool.
Yeah.
Lord of the Rings we saw in theaters as kids, and we're like, well, this is like the coolest thing we've ever seen. So anyway.
And it's just so such a delight now to get to make stuff together. I think certainly for us, I think the partnership is such an integral part, and such a wonderful piece of getting to do this together. It's
Yeah.
like, every moment that we're working, it's like, oh, we're hanging out with, it's like I get to hang out with my best friend and we get to
Yeah.
like do the thing we've always loved to do together.
There's
It's
a lot of like random like
been done
bedtime. You
well.
like go to a meeting and you're sitting around for 15 minutes before the thing starts. And if you're by yourself, it's kind of lame. And if you're with your, with your brother, it's like a total blast. So,
If you're friends with your brother, which you guys are.
not for long, but
Where did you come up with the idea for Alien, and how do you know when an idea you have about a story you want to tell that you want to make into a film, that it will be the one that hooks and you follow all the way through and do ultimately make?
This film came about. We read a New York Times article about this particular process in 2018, and we were kind of just immediately struck by so many elements of it. One, just the sheer like almost unbelievability of it. We're like, this is impossible and also horrible and cruel, and we were in shock that nobody else was like sort of talking about it. And so, for us, it's like, how do we advocate against it? That was something we were thinking about right off the bat. But also, we thought in some way that this particular process, something in its sort of banal cruelty, the kind of like the fact that everyone in the process was trying to do the right thing and still being punished, something about the couple of sort of confluences of things ended up making it feel like it not only spoke to these people's experience, but it also kind of resonated to a larger immigration, experience and think, and sort of the idea of the micro reflecting the macro is a place where for filmmakers, it's like, oh, there's like something there. That's a spot you can like really do, because films are contained and shorts are even more contained. And so if your short can reflect a larger truth, then it's like, okay, we're in kind of the right world to be kind of working, But in terms of turning into like knowing that it was going to be the idea, it's the kind of thing where when we're working on any kind of film, any kind of ideas, we're working on multiple things at once, and the things that kind of keep having gas go forward and the things that kind of run out of gas naturally fall away or fall to a different time frame or a later film or whatever. And so this film just kept, kind of producing as we were working on the story of it, pulling from real life, like kept producing kind of more and more gold. And so we'd keep working on it because it was felt timely and it felt really, kind of fresh and alive, I think.
Yeah, the film just kept resonating with us.
Yeah.
I think, when you are working on something and you just can't keep getting it out of your head and you keep thinking about it and
Yeah.
you keep coming back to it, I think for us, we know that that's something that we're interested in, that we want to talk about, that we feel like has real resonance
Yeah.
with us. And we always think if it has real resonance with us, then, we hope it has resonance with others.
Yeah, I think we found that people have resonated with this film, and I think it's like, okay, it's a good barometer. If it's like, if it makes us feel something, somebody else is going to feel something too.
How did you decide on the makeup of the family that would be represented in the story? The three principal characters are a wife, a husband, and their daughter. How did you figure out who to, base the story around?
It's a good question. It was something that we talked a lot about, should it just be a couple? I think at some for a long time it was just a couple. And then, at some point we realized that, for us, this story is really about family. And so I think that was one of the things that really struck us as we were working on this film and really doing a deep dive into the research and breaking the story on it was realizing how much we want to talk about family at the heart of this piece, and how much when we think about immigration more broadly, you know, it's so easy to get wrapped up and lost in the numbers of immigration and forget that actually we're just talking about people and families. We're talking about folks who want to, you know, take their kid to school and make dinner with their loved ones. And so I think for us, that's, you know, that family component was one that we realized we really wanted.
Yeah, including Nina was, you know, created a family in a way that just a couple didn't quite do. I think also in terms of, you know, the makeup of the family, you know, I think one of the reasons that also that we found this story, one that we thought was a good one, that, I don't know, that just sort of felt resonant to us in some ways, was I think the idea of a citizen and a non-citizen's perspective both felt something that we ourselves could kind of like engage with and approach as two citizens telling the story. You know, having a citizen in the mix kind of gave us a lens into it in a way, into the story that we wouldn't have had otherwise.
One of the most blood pressure raising moments of the film is when Sophie is trying to call Oscar and she can't get a hold of him because he's in a meeting and he's correctly, you know, ignoring his phone. She's texting him. She's trying to call him. And that shows how, like, as connected as we are to each other with these devices, you know, in our hands, in our pockets all the time, sometimes you just can't reach people. And I wanted to comment on it because it has proven difficult, I think, for filmmakers to create stress around everybody being able to be in touch all the time. People set movies, you know, like back in time so they don't have phones, or just in a world where they don't have phones, or get rid of the phone from the story somehow.
Cell phone service goes out when you go to the cabin in the woods or whatever.
Right. Yeah. So I just wanted to, you know, talk about that scene with you and commend you on creating a very realistic tension and drama around cell phones just like not happening the way that they should or the way that you want them to.
Yeah, I think one of the things that makes this scene work is the control of information, you know, by us in the film. You know, I think in general, we kind of think about the film as like a horror film in some ways, almost like a documentary.
It does feel like that.
Film.
Yes.
And one piece of horror language that is used in the film is this idea of like what's outside the frame is more terrifying than what's in the frame. And a phone is the ultimate kind of limiter of a frame. You know, somebody else is in control of the viewpoint. You know, Sophie's vision is controlled by Oscar and in some ways out of his control. So she doesn't get to kind of dictate what's going to happen. I think that relinquishing of control, both to Sophie and to the viewer, that you don't know, you know, what the camera is going to point out or not point out or not show, is quite a scary thing in some ways. And so I think that, you know, that final shot of the phone sequence where the phone's on the ground looking up at the ceiling and it just holds for quite a long time in the pacing of the edit, you know, you're just hearing the audio and the off screen, that what's outside the frame is much more terrifying than what's in the frame in that. And it would be much worse if we had pointed it at Oscar, you know what I mean? It needs to be looking at the ceiling because your imagination takes over outside of what you can see. And it's scarier than what you can see, you know what I mean? And so I think, you know, trying to use the phone as a way to control the audience's vision is one thing we're thinking a lot about.
What's next after you attend the Academy Awards and something happens? what else are you, what can you tell me about what you're working on? What has this nomination opened for you? What's next, guys?
Well, we have another film that we finished, another short film called Trapped, which won South by Southwest this past year and Palm Springs. And so that one is still in the film festival world, but hopefully will be coming out sometime soon. And then we're hard at work on our debut feature.
And is the plot or title a secret of the debut feature?
Both are currently still under wraps, but I will say this: if you like our three shorts, you're definitely gonna like the feature. It's in a similar vein, though it's not the same story. It's something that you've never heard of before, and it's, I think, very exciting and timely and fun. But it's gonna be fun in a stressful way,
but also fun in a fun way.
In a fun way, yeah.
Sure. Congratulations again on your Academy Award nomination and this film, which is a a beautiful and terrifying depiction of something that is too relevant, and it's but a very well made and well told story. So congratulations again, and thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you so much.
Oh, thanks so much for having us.
Sam and David Cutler-Kreutz are the filmmakers behind the Oscar-nominated short film Alien. The film is viewable online and will be linked along with this interview at wamc.org/roundtable. The 97th Annual Academy Awards will take place this coming Sunday. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.